From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Skin. It's the largest organ of the body, so it's not surprising that skin cancer, specifically melanoma, is in the top five of the most common cancers in the United States. The American Melanoma Foundation says one American dies of melanoma almost every hour. In the Sunshine State, melanoma is responsible for about 75% of all skin cancer deaths. It's the second most common form of cancer for adolescents and young adults. According to a report from the U.S. Surgeon General last summer, about 6,000 cases of melanoma are estimated to be related to indoor tanning in the U.S. In today's Encore edition of Gulf Coast Live, we'll explore the steadily increasing rates of melanoma in young people, the reasons, the treatments, and the prevention. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm Amy Tardif. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to today's discussion, Your Never Too Young Stories of Skin Cancer, specifically about melanoma in young people. WGCU chose to focus on this issue after discovering that melanoma is one of the most common types of cancer among U.S. teens and young adults. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reports rates of melanoma increased more than 200% from 1973 to 2011. It says more than 63,000 new cases of melanoma are diagnosed in the U.S., and nearly 9,000 people die from this disease each year. According to a report from the U.S. Surgeon General from last July, more than 400,000 cases of skin cancer, about 6,000 of which are melanomas, are estimated to be related to indoor tanning in the U.S. The National Cancer Institute says melanoma among white women, ages 15 to 39, has shown a particularly striking increase, up 50% from 1980 to 2004. Because of those numbers, the U.S. Surgeon General released a new call to action last summer, saying that skin cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the country, and it's a major health problem that requires immediate action. Even though it can be prevented, it can be disfiguring and even deadly. Joining us today are two women who had melanoma when they were young. Here in studio is Ava Kaplan from Naples. Thanks for being here, Ava.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us by phone is Jessica Cosden from Fort Myers. Hi, Jessica.
Hello.
Also with us in studio is dermatologist Dr. Stephen Duckettman from the Woodruff Institute in Naples and Bonita Springs. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Dermatology, a former professor at UCLA's medical school, and a member of Collier and Lee County's medical societies. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Duckettman.
You're welcome.
In studio is Beth Hayes, who is the program manager for mission delivery for the Florida Division of the American Cancer Society. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us by phone is Matt Russell, CEO of the International Smart Tan Network, the indoor tanning industry source for information and salon certification and training since 1985. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You can post comments to Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live, and post your stories about the impact of cancer on your life at wgcucancer.org. Let's begin by learning a little bit more about just what melanoma is. Dr. Duckettman, the National Cancer Institute defines melanoma as a form of cancer that begins in the melanocytes, cells that make the pigment melanin. Why is melanoma dangerous?
Melanoma has a disconcerting ability to metastasize extremely early in its course. Melanoma can also occur in organs other than the skin, such as the retina, the uvea of the eye, the iris of the eye, and it can even occur around the brain where the melanocytes actually first start. But what makes melanoma dangerous, unlike basal cell and squamous cell, is the early metastasis or spreading beyond the original site.
Rates of melanoma increased more than 200% from 1973 to 2011. Do we have any idea why?
Well, the general theory is, of course, sun exposure. I'm going to go back before 2007 or the 1990s. If you watch a movie from the 1930s, everyone is in long-sleeve shirts, long dresses, long pants, and they're wearing hats. If you watch a movie from the 2000s, everyone is in, shall we say, rather skimpier clothing, and they're getting tan. So it's clearly related to ultraviolet exposure, and that can be confirmed in the laboratory.
Why, and I understand this is probably speculation, are more young people getting it now more than ever? Same thing?
Same thing. Exposure to ultraviolet light at an earlier and younger age. There is some indication that both the immune system and the ability to fight off the ultraviolet effects are not as well developed in younger people, and that occurs later on, even into the mid-20s.
I have some statistics here from the American Cancer Society. Estimates there will be nearly 43,000 new cases of melanoma in men this year and more than 31,000 cases of melanoma in women. Figures from the National Cancer Institute say the probability of developing invasive melanoma before age 49 is 1 in 207 for women, 1 in 294 for men. That compares to 1 in 112 for women age 70 and older, 1 in 47 for men older than 70. Why is it so different for men and women as we age?
Because it goes back again to the clothing. Men took off more clothing earlier. Since this is an enjoy now, pay later plan, as is much of life, the development of melanoma occurs years after the actual insults. So men were rather more exposed back in the 40s and 50s when those older people now were seeing their melanoma. We're seeing more melanoma in younger women because they have somewhat caught up with men in their exposure.
If I have more moles on naturally on my body, should I be more worried or get my skin checked more often?
Uncertain. There are some statistics that if you have more than 50 nevi, the technical term for moles, then your increased risk of melanoma is definitely there, and you should probably be checked more often. But the current recommendation pretty much is yearly check for anyone who's had significant sun exposure at this time, regardless of age.
Are there other reasons a person is more prone to getting melanoma?
Well, some melanomas occur randomly. We do see melanomas on the bottom of the feet or under the toenails where presumably there wasn't so much ultraviolet light, but they're very small numbers. And there are also a family melanoma syndrome, which is a genetic dominant where members of the family get melanoma. But that, again, is a very, very small number, and there are genetic markers that are easy to detect in those people.
Remember to post comments on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live, and post stories about the impact of cancer on your life at WGCUcancer.org. Let's hear your stories, now first Ava and then Jessica. Ava, were you a sunbather?
I didn't think I was, but I was always at the beach. I didn't necessarily put sunscreen on when I was supposed to, so not deliberately, but definitely. And with red hair and blue eyes, I should have been smarter.
How did you discover that you had melanoma?
I was at the dermatologist for something on my face and turned around and said, by the way, there's something on my back. And he discovered it.
What was the reaction in the room?
It was actually at the University of Pennsylvania where research was going on at the time, and he was calm, but I could tell something was going on. He excused himself, and all of a sudden a large group of people started to come into the room, and can we take pictures? Can we do this? Can we do that? And I, even at a young age, I knew something just wasn't good. I don't think I knew that something like this existed, but I knew something was wrong.
How old were you?
19.
What were your, you said you weren't a sunbather or laying out. What were your habits?
I was a kid that went to the beach. I played sports. I was in a bathing suit. I was in tank tops. I was just not watching the exposure at all,
Were you in a habit of putting on sunblock?
No, I don't think so. I think I was told to by my mother, but didn't, just typical kid.
So what did they do with it? And where was it? You're saying left shoulder?
Left shoulder. And they removed it then and then tested it. And then about a week later did a much larger surgery.
What was that surgery like, the second one?
I was scared. Again, I guess in some ways, just in sort of typical young person's brain, I didn't fully understand the impact of what was happening. There were a lot of people around, so I knew it was important. They were watching me carefully. But as that day and maybe the weeks that followed, I didn't think about it much. But I was in college, and the school doctor knew me because I had to be followed. You know, I had a lot of follow-up appointments. They were monitoring me very carefully. So it just it affected a time of my life that should have been much more carefree. I was friends with the doctor. You know, that's who I spent more time with than anyone, I guess.
For how long did they have to monitor you?
Carefully for about 10 years, I was part of their research because there was a lot going on, but I'm monitored forever now. You know, but you don't stop. But the research itself was about a 10-year program. I mean, they were a little surprised at that moment. I mean, this was in the early 80s that they had a 19-year-old. You know, and now I guess they wouldn't be as surprised.
You didn't have to have chemo or radiation or anything.
I did not. They said that had this happened a year before, there probably would have been much more extensive work that had to be done and treatment. But it was what they called a Clark stage 2, which is, I don't think they use that staging anymore. Is that correct?
You know? Correct.
But they said it wasn't necessary.
How has your life changed because of this?
I'm very careful in the sun. I mean, living in Florida, that seems, you know, silly, but I really am. I'm always covered. I wear sunscreen. I sometimes wear a hat. I always wear sunglasses. I think about it. I actually think about it. And I don't know if people really do, but I do.
And you had an episode since then on...
Yeah. I mean,
not melanoma, but
it wasn't. It was a basal cell on my left forearm from driving. If you think of the position you're in driving, I mean, I'm completely covered from head to toe, but the one spot that where I can have sun exposure, I got a cancer. It actually kind of made me mad. Like, how could this happen?
Because you had been so protective of yourself.
Right, except that, you know, the one spot that's not covered.
And Jessica, what was your situation? How old were you? How was it discovered?
I was 22 years old. I was a senior in college, and I actually went to the school health center because I had a cold, and the nurse practitioner was looking in my ear, and she noticed a dark spot on the back of my left ear, and she said, by the way, you should really get that checked out at a dermatologist. So I did, and when I went there, they checked my whole body, and they also found a spot on my right shoulder.
Were you used to going in the sun? What was your what were your habits sun-wise?
I grew up in Florida, so I was at the beach a lot as a kid. My parents were big on using sunscreen, but I think as I got older, I was not as careful. And then in college, I did use a tanning bed several times the year that I was diagnosed with melanoma.
What was your surgery like? Did you have it off both sides, the ear and the shoulder?
Yes. So the surgery was scheduled for, it just happened to be scheduled the day of graduation. So that's what I was doing instead of graduating my senior year of college. They did remove the entirety of both spots on my left ear and my right shoulder. There was a plastic surgeon for my ear because it's such a delicate, small area. But they were able to get the complete spot out of both spots, and I've been cancer-free since then.
Were you monitored for years afterwards? The same situation? What happened?
Yep, same thing. I go every 6 months for a checkup, and I've had a few spots removed just as a precaution since then, and they've all been fine. But for the rest of my life, I'll be going twice a year for a full checkup.
Now, Ava mentioned in a previous interview that you can't give blood?
Yes, I was. They don't accept my blood as a donor.
But Jessica, you don't have that situation?
Not that I'm aware of.
Dr. Duckettman, are you aware of life changes that for someone who had a melanoma that they can or cannot, for example, give blood or do other things in life?
That does seem a little unusual to me.
So Ava, you can give blood.
There may be other reasons. I think you would have to know why they told you that. Okay. But I don't routinely tell my patients not to give blood.
What is your reaction, doctor, to hearing these stories about both ladies? They were in college. Is this normal for you, or is this surprising? Or?
Well, obviously, that young is a little less usual than older, but it's not surprising anymore. We used to be told back in the 80s, if you had a kid with a mole, don't worry about it until they're much older. It wasn't going to be melanoma. We don't tell anyone that anymore. There's just so much melanoma in even preteen children now that you have to take this all very seriously. And if a mole is changing, even on a child, I'm going to take it off.
Remember to post comments on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Post your stories about the impact of cancer on your life at WGCUcancer.org. Matt Russell with the International Smart Tan Network. What is the association's stance on a situation like Jessica's? Though there is no definitive correlation, she said she did go to tanning salons before getting melanoma.
Well, you know, I don't think there's a person on this call or listening that hasn't somehow been affected personally by cancer. I have two sisters that are breast cancer survivors, so we've all been impacted by it. But we all to all of these folks, our loved ones, to explore this topic dispassionately and objectively. And that's what we believe is the only way to find the real answers here. I mean, and there's a lot of nuance to this message, and we've heard so far from your guests that it takes years after the insult for melanoma to develop. And yet, we have a melanoma victim here that tanned less than a year, approximately 1 year before she was diagnosed. So can we link that to tanning bed? I'm not saying you can't, but obviously there's been a lot of nuance here. There's a lot of science that suggests that indoor workers have a higher incidence of melanoma than outdoor workers. So those who get more sunshine have a lower incidence. Many studies have shown that. But it is common to find it in parts of the body that don't get regular exposure. And as we've heard, it's increasing fastest in men over 50 who don't frequent tanning salons. So we're looking for the truth, too. You know, we are, you know, looking at the science very closely and objectively and dispassionately.
In that light, a report conducted by the University of Miami School of Medicine published in JAMA Dermatology found more skin cancers were attributed to indoor tanning than lung cancers were linked to smoking in certain regions of the U.S. and 15 other countries. It also found college and university students are the heaviest tanning bed users at 55%, which it says is a special concern in light of other research showing those who use such devices before the age of 35 dramatically increase their risk of melanoma. So just stating what some of the research that I found was. Also in 2009, the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer designated UV-emitting tanning devices as carcinogenic to humans. Matt, what does your organization say about that?
Well, being listed on the World Health Organization list of known carcinogens doesn't necessarily mean that all UV is harmful and that it's going to cause cancer. It doesn't mean that moderate UV exposure will cause cancer or that there's a problem with that. The problem with that listing and the way it's reported and the way that it's cited in the headlines that we read is, you know, there are a number of substances on that listing that, again, there's no, they're not establishing dosage. So, for example, ultraviolet light and sunbeds, the sunshine and sunbeds, are on a listing with red wine, salted fish, sawdust, and birth control pills. I don't think anyone listening here would recommend that we ban those activities or those products. But yet the headlines we see are tanning beds are as dangerous as tobacco, arsenic, and plutonium because those things are also on that list. So, again, there's a lot of nuance to this, and there's a lot of spin to this message. And again, we just want to get down to the science and the facts and deal with this completely objectively, fairly and honestly. The tobacco comparison is another, again, exaggeration. If you look at that study that you cited, it's a study has already been discredited. It was a single paper that linked sunbeds to non-melanoma skin cancers and then compared it to being more deadly than tobacco. To suggest that, that comparison is, again, a major exaggeration, and to think that UV light from any source, or anything for that matter, could be as damaging or deadly or as big a health concern as tobacco is a mistake. So again, we just want to get down to the science and look at this objectively, and that's typically what we do when we attend hearings and things of this nature. When we sit down and look at just the science and not the headlines and the exaggerations and the emotion, you'll find that this isn't clear. I wouldn't be doing this for 30 years if it were. I have to look my children in the eye and my grandchildren in the eye with what I do for a living. And studying this for 30 years, I found that there is this is not a clear-cut, by far, a clear-cut black-and-white issue.
Florida Senator Eleanor Sobel of Broward County put forth a bill in the Senate this year that would have restricted tanning beds for children under 16 without the written permission of their parents, but she could not find a sponsor in the House. Last year, her bill did have a companion in the House, but they failed to make it out of committee. And Matt, the American Suntanning Association, or ASA salons, already do have teenage standards, not allowing anyone under 18 to tan without a parent's written permission. So what sparked that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is like a public swimming pool or anything else. There needs to be standards. And I'm not saying that our industry is, and everyone in it, is completely innocent of, just like any other business in any other industry, of not having a lifeguard at the swimming pool. You know, that had taken place in the 80s and 90s. But today, we do have those standards in place. We skin type people. We educate them on the dangers of sunburn. If you're a skin type 1, a red-haired, fair-skinned individual with a family history, we don't allow you to tan and use our UV devices. We use spray tan devices for you, or ask you, find another solution. So we do have a lot of those standards in place. We do ask parents to sign and to be aware of their children's UV behavior, and we also educate the teens and the parents about their sun care habits outside of the tanning salon when they go to the beach and they go outside.
Yes, I saw on the ASA, American Sun Tanning Association's website, that people's skin types are classified, such as types 1 through 6, 1 being light features, always burn, cannot tan. Perhaps Ava would be in that category. And your ASA professional tanning salons don't allow you to tan in them. 6 being black, tanning has no effect. And I'm wondering who does those evaluations. Are they always adhered to?
Yes, we have certification program where we teach the biological effects of UV light, how the skin tans, skin safety, eye safety. We teach these to these operators. It's an 8-hour course. These folks are trained and certified, so they can they can review these customers when they come in. They can skin type them. They can determine what their previous tanning habits have been. Have they been outside in the last few days? This sort of thing. And then we set their exposure schedule based on that information.
What about sun-sensitive medications? Are they supposed to ask if somebody's on something that'll make them especially photosensitive?
Yes, the industry standard consent form asks all of it. They ask about tanning history, skin cancer history. We skin type them. We ask them if they're taking any medications or taking anything that would make them photosensitive. If they are being treated for psoriasis, we will not tan them for fear that they may be taking photosensitizing medications as prescribed by the doctor. So there's a lot of precautions that we put in place in our stores.
Matt, your association website does have a warning that says, quote, notice, exposure to ultraviolet radiation may increase the risk of skin damage, skin cancer, and can cause serious eye injury. Are your salons or ASA association salons required to post these kinds of notices as well?
We're not required. We just believe it's responsible. You know, there is science that does show a correlation between UV light and skin cancer, no question, especially the non-melanoma skin cancers. Melanoma is the one where there's a lot more nuance to that research. But we put those warnings on there as an act of responsibility to let people know that you are taking a risk. and you need to be aware of that.
The association touts that a base tan is an arsenal against sunburn. Dr. Duckettman, is it only sunburn that causes skin cancer, or is it tanning itself?
Well, there are two parts to that question. Is a base tan a protection against sunburn? You have to divide the ultraviolet light into three parts. The part that's closest to visible is ultraviolet A. That's the tanning rays. There are also the rays that cause aging, wrinkling, and a lot of the sun damage that people then spend a lot of money to correct when they're older. The ultraviolet B rays are the sunburn rays. They're not particularly blocked by melanin. The protection afforded by tanning is from the UVB rays themselves, thicken the stratum corneum, which prevents some absorption. That also damages the cells and contributes to skin cancer, but it will protect you somewhat from sunburning. Tanning booths do not allow, because they're UVA only, that layer to build up, so they don't really protect you as much from sunburning. UVC is the bactericidal rays that your dentist uses to sterilize things, and that's completely blocked by ozone and should not occur naturally on Earth. UVA is not blocked by ozone and is constant through the day. UVB is blocked and therefore only occurs when the sun is straight overhead, which is 10 to 2 in the winter and 11 to 3 in summer because we change the hours. Unfortunately, all three, well, UVC actually would kill you before it would cause cancer, but UVA can be shown to cause cancer, and UVB can be shown to cause cancer. So the issue really then becomes, do you really want to go and get tan, knowing that it is increasing your risk for cancer, and not just melanoma? Or should you be protecting yourself? It's ultimately a choice that everyone has to make. That guidelines are very important up to age 18, but I would also say that at age 18, people may not be fully qualified, because we don't let them drink till 21, for instance, to make those decisions responsibly. So it's not just the tanning you get at the tanning booth, that is additive to all the other tanning you get.
So why not just spray tan? Matt, does spray tanning have advantages and disadvantages? Why not just do that?
Well, first of all, I'd like to clarify something that is a big misunderstanding that's repeated on a regular basis, and that is that tanning units only emit UVA light. Tanning units mimic natural sunlight. Right now, if you step outside from your studio, you would experience 95% UVA and 5% UVB being emitted from the sun in Florida right now about this time. And that's over 90% of what sunbeds emit. We are 5% UVB and 95% UVA, just like the sun. In regards to spray booths, yeah, it's a wonderful alternative. And we have a lot of customers that are coming in for that. A lot of folks are coming in for, this is a cosmetic tan, whether it's UV light or a spray tan. And again, over the years, we have tried to accommodate science and healthcare issues with the development and redevelopment of our equipment and our services. For example, in the early 1990s, high-pressure tanning units were developed in Europe because the general scientific thinking was that UVB light was the spectrum that caused melanoma skin cancer. And that's why sunscreens only block UVB for years. So our industry tried to act responsibly by developing equipment that only emitted UVA light only. Today, and in the last 20 years, we've all learned that that wasn't the case. And so now we are mimicking natural sunlight with 95 and 5, we call it, 95% UVA and 5% UVB.
So in that case, how does this differ from natural sunlight, which is known to cause melanoma, basal cell, and squamous cell carcinoma, if it mimics sunlight?
We don't deny that we are the same as the sun, and with the same risks. What we hear popping up time and time again is, I don't hear folks saying that sunlight, going to the beach, is like taking heroin or smoking a cigarette, but yet we do hear that about our tanning equipment, our sunbeds. So we understand there are risks, and we accept those risks, but we need to look at them again objectively and honestly.
Post comments to Facebook at WGCU Public Media, tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live, and post your stories about the impact of cancer on your life at WGCUcancer.org. Dr. Duckettman, what is the course of progression for melanoma from a spot on the skin, what it does to you if it's not caught in time?
If it's not caught in time, at this point, it's basically going to kill you. Unfortunately, melanoma is one of the, metastatic melanoma remains one of the least treatable of all cancers. There is no chemotherapy for it. It responds poorly to radiation. They're trying to develop immunological therapy, and they're touting benefits of medications that can buy less than a year of time as significant improvements, which they are. So with melanoma, we're back where we were with other cancers years ago.
What are the most surprising discoveries and advances in the last 10 years? I'm sure you talked about immunotherapy. Is that one of the newest ones?
It's really the only thing being tried at this time.
Okay. What is it?
Immunologic therapy is to try to either use proteins that boost the body's own immune system or directly destroy the cancer cells, but in a way that is not chemotherapy, which poisons the cells, but as we heard, targeting the T cells to destroy the cancer. They're working on vaccines where hopefully there has to be something different about a cancer cell that presumably your own body's immunity could detect. So they're working on ways to try to develop that ability.
Do you think there will be a cure in sight in our lifetime?
With our lifetime, I hope so. Again, one can't tell when breakthroughs are going to occur.
Beth, are there resources to help parents with cancer talk about it with their children and vice versa? What about with a young person in college, Ava and Jessica, talk about it with their young person?
We do have literature available by calling our 800 number. It's available for both the parents and the children to call at any given point. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that phone number is called every 3 seconds across the entire country. So it's a great resource for people to get information and other sorts of resources.
Do you have any tips on how that can be done for somebody who might be struggling with it at this time?
The biggest thing is to call 1-800-227-2345. They have all of the information, including brochures and everything, but they also have information regarding how to talk to people about it and how to just to live with in the questions that they have.
Ava, how was it discussed amongst your family and friends?
My parents kind of rolled up their sleeves, and once they realized the significance of the situation, rolled up their sleeves and just made sure I was getting the best care possible, and didn't discuss what could have been or what maybe, just dealt with the situation at hand. Years later, my father told me that the doctor said, he said, if we had not caught this when we did, we could guarantee she would be dead by 30. I mean, told him straight out, and he just processed it, but kept it to himself.
Yeah, until you were how old?
I was 19.
No, when he told you
when
that.
When he told me, 25, not 30, but, you know, but he started to use it as a way to differentiate between a problem and an aggravation in your life. Like, this is a problem. This is a really big problem if it's not caught. And I'm lucky that it was caught in time. Unlucky, I guess, that I got it, but lucky that I caught it in time. People need to pay attention to their skin. I mean, this is something, as the doctor said, this is something caught early is curable. Not caught in time I don't want to sound dramatic, but it's a death sentence. I mean, that's what it is. You know, if they can't help, I mean.
Jessica, how was it discussed amongst your family when you were younger, and then was it brought up again?
Well, when it first happened, I had a similar experience as Ava. We just kind of focused on the matter at hand and pushed through. And I guess my parents didn't say much about it to me because I didn't seem that worried at the time. We talk about it sometimes now. I'm 31 now. But never talking about it as if it could have killed me because it was caught so soon. I just felt like it was a little spot, not a big deal. I know now that it was a big deal, and like Ava said, a death sentence. But at the time, I didn't, and I think my parents and my family and my friends were just hoping that everything would go fine, which it did.
Jessica, you have young children. How do you treat them when they go out in the sun?
Oh, they wear sunscreen.
Slather
and they
them
will.
Up.
Yes. And as soon as they're only 3 and 4 now, but when they're old enough, I'm going to teach them that the sun is a great thing, but it can also hurt us, so we need to be careful.
And Ava, your children, I think, are a little bit older.
My daughter is older. She wears the body sleeve. She's a darker complected than I am, but but she's very sensitive to the situation. She's covered even in a bathing suit. She wears sunscreen. Anyone around me is wearing sunscreen. A hat.
Has she seen your scar?
She has.
Has she asked about it?
She knows what it is. I don't think it concerns her to look at it. It looks more like a burn than a scar. It's rather large. It's but not terribly large, but it's not my whole back. But it and she understands. I think she sees it as a warning. We live in Florida. She understands that this is something that is so serious. But you can protect yourself from.
You know, your scar and Jessica's scar look identical. Just thought I'd mention it.
Okay.
Even though their spots apparently were different, and Jessica's, I think, was smaller than yours, but on opposite shoulders, the scars are very similar. And they were a couple of different, maybe a decade apart,
right,
as well.
Which
is not surprising. When your daughter's in her young teens?
Yes.
Would you let her use a tanning bed?
Absolutely not. I think what is important to realize is that some of the problems that we're dealing with have also to do with our perception of self and body, and we tend to like to be tan because somehow we think we look better or something like that. And I think you need to dig a little bit deeper into yourself and figure out what's beautiful.
Dr. Duckettman, when folks come in to your practice and you see them with, they're not pasty white, what kind of talking do you give them?
Well, I tell them, of course, that it's their body and they get to make their own decisions. I tend to try to approach things with a somewhat sardonic sense of humor rather than yelling at people. And I do tell them that if they continue to tan, they're quite likely to get a skin cancer of some sort. And they should guess who's going to have more fun getting that skin cancer cut off, me or them. Invariably, they guess correctly. Again, it's the person has to decide what is worth doing, what they want to do, and what is not worth doing. I mean, it's the same decision you make with food, with tobacco. You have to recognize that ultraviolet light is dangerous to human skin. Up until relatively recently, we did not expose our skin to ultraviolet light, and it wasn't really a problem. Now we do, and now we need to take measures to prevent those cancers from happening.
Post comments to Facebook at WGCU Public Media, tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live, and post your stories about the impact of cancer on your life at WGCUcancer.org. Let's talk a little bit about the cost. The National Cancer Institute says nearly 5 million people in the U.S. are treated for skin cancer every year at an average annual cost of more than $8 billion, with a B, dollars. Ava and Jessica, I'm wondering, first, Ava, did you fear going to have the areas checked because of cost at all?
Before?
When you had your, when you went and got to, went to the dermatologist first, did you worry about, I shouldn't go, it's going to cost money?
No, not at all.
Didn't worry about
it. I mean, I was young. It was,
on your parents'
I was dealing with, you know, acne. I mean, the cost of a checkup is a lot less than the cost of a treatment, and I think people need to think about that.
What about you, Jessica? Did you worry at all at the time when you were in college about going to the doctor because it was going to cost money?
I didn't. I was insured under my parents' plan still at that point, and cost was not a concern that I had.
Although it is a problem for a lot of people, I would imagine, Beth, are there resources that exist to help people for dealing with the cost of their cancer care?
There are resources available that, again, is we don't have anything here locally, but we do can connect. We can connect people with resources that offer help financially.
There are.
Okay.
Yes. Dr. Duckettman, HIPAA's existing, I know that, but you told us a story of a patient that waited too long. I guess this happens a lot.
Yes. Either they don't have health insurance. The particular patient was 40, did not have health insurance, knew about the growth for 3 years before it started to bleed and forced the person to come in. And by the time we diagnosed it, it was already metastatic melanoma. I've had people who have been told that their growths were harmless. I never do that. I say I think it's harmless, but if it continues to grow or get bigger, we definitely need to take a look at it again. And again, if I can't dismiss it as being harmless, like the barnacle growths that people get, we're probably going to biopsy it. And then there are people who have something on their back and they don't have anyone to look at it, and they just never knew it was there until it was too late, started to break down and bleed. But we've all seen patients who... Oh, and then you also get the men. It's not too often women, but the men who are too macho to come to the doctor, and although the growth is changing and their wife is encouraging them, they just don't. And those people tend to have metastatic melanoma, and again, that's not going to be something that we can ultimately cure at this time.
And the 40-year-old who waited too long?
Didn't do very well.
Which means he's gone?
Yeah.
We got a Facebook message from Larry, who said his insurance does not cover a physician full body check, and only he can only see a physician assistant. I don't know if that is on par, but what are some ways to work with patients that may not have the money or insurance coverage to support their treatment?
Well, of course, you can go to skin cancer screening exams and health fairs, but that's really just one specific point. I think most doctors are willing to, if you're self-pay, are going to work with you. I think it's important to get checked once a year. We're not that expensive if we don't do anything. If I have to do a biopsy, my part's probably the least expensive part of that biopsy. But other than that, you know, as the provider, I don't have the resources that I can point them to. Mm-hmm. That comes from the social services of the county.
Do you have any idea, I don't know if you do as the physician, if Beth does, if the Affordable Care Act is helpful at all in supporting cancer prevention and treatment?
I can answer that. It has been very helpful, especially for the younger people who are coming in. I have lots of people who are coming in now that they have insurance who didn't before.
What about... Ava mentioned this. Sunlight passing through windows into buildings, or while we're driving with the sun shining onto our left arm or the left side of our face. Is this more of a problem than we're thinking? We're talking about, you know, blaming tanning beds and the sunshine, but, you know, we could be sitting in our office with the sun shining right in our face.
Most modern windows block UV completely. That's what an energy-efficient window does. It's the ultraviolet light that's converted to infrared in the building that causes the heat. unfortunately, so if your window is made before 1960, all the ultraviolet light gets through. After about 1960, the UVB is filtered out because they changed the formula of the glass, but the UVA gets through. Modern windows, energy-efficient windows, completely block the UV. However, if the screen, if they've been done by just a film and that's getting torn or damaged, then it's going to get through. Unfortunately, cars are a different story. Some manufacturers put the UV in some models, and you really don't know. You can certainly get an aftermarket UV coating, and it does not have to be very dark. Every pair of prescription glasses sold in America has a complete UV coating that completely blocks the UV and is not very dark and doesn't get the police annoyed at you. So it can be done, and it can be done very easily and very cheaply, and it's probably worth doing. And if you don't get a deep, dark coat, you don't need a prescription.
Do you think all playgrounds, especially in Florida, should have shade roofs?
Ideally, yes, although I think that would probably end up being very expensive, and it probably would be easier to just put the protective clothing on the kids.
I understand that, if a child shows up to school with a hat, they get reprimanded or, they have to remove the hat. I understand that in Australia, if the child shows up to school without their hat, they get sent home.
They're ahead of us that way. But then again, when you take all those Celtic-skinned people and put them in the tropics, the cancer rate in Australia is monumentally greater than it is in the United States because of their sun exposure. And they have better sunscreens. They have ad campaigns. I think it's called Slip, Slap, Slop. Slip on your clothes, slap on your hat, slop on your sunscreen before going out. They do much more than we do to educate people about the dangers of ultraviolet light because it's such an epidemic there. We are starting to approach them.
I understand. I think this is true. I didn't fact check it, but they're missing part of the ozone over Australia as well. So.
Probably not.
Probably
that would
not
be
true.
More New Zealand.
More New Zealand, okay. Well, then they probably have a higher cancer rate there even as
right.
well.
But all of this is kind of independent of the ozone because you're seeing increased skin cancer rates even in northern countries. Mm-hmm. It really has to do with behavior, and it's whether people are going to protect themselves or not.
And how do we change that?
Education.
I would like to give each of our panelists a final time to give a statement. Let's start with Matt from the International Tanning Association, Matt Russell. Do you have a final statement to make?
Yes. I would just like to remind everyone that, again, there's a lot of nuance to this issue and that it's not a one-size-fits-all. The skin cancer risks for redheads, like the doctor pointed out just a few minutes ago, those are the genetic propensity to the disease, and tropical climates is very, very high. And we also see, on the other end of that spectrum, dark-skinned individuals living in normal northern climates with a higher incidence of breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, and those diseases due to a lack of sunlight. So this is a very complex issue, and again, we need to look at it objectively and let the science speak for itself.
Thank you. Jessica Costin, do you have a final statement?
Yes, actually, two little short things. First, I have found that it wasn't worth the risk that I took, whether it's directly linked to tanning beds or not, tanning in general. It just wasn't worth it to go through what I went through. And I think I should have been thinking more about my body image issues because that's why I was tanning. And second of all, if you see something weird, you shouldn't be afraid to check it out. Better safe than sorry. And I'm so glad that I took my nurse's advice and went to the dermatologist when I did.
Thank you. Ava Kaplan.
As I mentioned before, I think the issue of skin cancer has a lot to do with our body image and what is projected in society. And I think we need to look at ourselves and what we value as a community, as a larger community. I also think that it's really important to understand that this is one of those things that can be prevented, and it's important that you take care of yourself.
When you say body image, you're talking about we want to look tan because it makes us look prettier or something?
Right. We tend to try to make ourselves feel better in some way. We're also outside, not being careful to try to make ourselves look better. But you need to be careful when you do that.
Beth Hayes with the American Cancer Society, what would you like to say?
I would just like to say that prevention and early detection are the key. As long as we educate everybody about the dangers of tanning and just about any other type of cancer screening type of things that we need to make everybody aware of. So prevention with early detection and education would be my key three words.
And Dr. Stephen Duckettman.
I'm going to make two comments, actually. One is about the body image. If you go to any museum and look at a Renaissance painting, forget the men, they're outside in armor beating each other up with swords. But if you look at the women, all of whom, of course, are the nobility, they are very white and very fair because the peasants are outside harvesting turnips. That changes in the Industrial Revolution when the peasants come inside to the factory and the wealthy go to the beach. Our standards of tan and our standards of beauty change through the ages. So that's number one, and I do agree that it is a body image issue. Number two, I think I heard the representative of the tanning industry say that additional cancers were caused by lack of tanning, and that is not at all true. You cannot say that vitamin D, which is produced by the skin, but is not the active form of vitamin D, which is produced by the kidney and is the rate-limiting step in the kidney, has not been shown to be protective of anything. So this is an issue that comes back to behavior. Melanoma is serious. Basal cells and squamous cells are seriously disruptive of one's life and one's appearance. They're not as deadly because they don't metastasize for years. But they are a significant issue, and all three of them can be linked to ultraviolet light.
They're significant because they disfigure, but they don't go inside and kill you.
Well, they don't go inside and kill you for a large number of years, but if you are vigorous enough to ignore the bleeding and all the problems that they cause, and I do have a patient right now who was a hermit who did, they will eventually kill you. But you have, instead of the very short period of time that melanoma gives you to cut it off before it spreads, they give you a much, much longer period of time so that they are not as dangerous. But when we cut them off, they're every bit as disfiguring.
That is all the time we have today. Thank you so much to our guests, Ava Kaplan from Naples and Jessica Cosden from Fort Myers, for sharing their stories of having melanoma when they were young ladies. Also, thanks to dermatologist Dr. Stephen Duckettman from the Woodruff Institute in Bonita Springs and Naples. Thanks to Matt Russell with the International Smart Tan Network. And thank you to Beth Hayes with the Florida Division of the American Cancer Society. There's more information on today's show online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Please continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Remember to post your stories about the impact of cancer on your life at WGCUcancer.org. Special thanks to Richard Chinqui, Luke Martin, Barbara Steinhoff, Paula Sklodowski, Sherry Coleman, Tim Kenny, Brad Taylor, and all the other people from WGCU who helped put today's panel together. This is WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.